Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today's returning guest author is Philip Vega. Philip is the award-winning author of the book titled Last Exit to Montauk, a book that has captured audiences with his easy prose and heartwarming tale. He is a Long Islander with Hispanic roots who now resides in Florida. His most recent title is The Captain and the Queen, which we will discuss today. Phil is available for author talks, guest panels, radio and podcast interviews, guest appearances, and book signings. And you can find out more about him at his website, Philip Vega, V-E-G-A, philipvega.com. And I am so happy to share him again. So welcome back, Phil.
Hi, Pat. How are you? Thank you so much for having me back. I got to tell you, I'm excited to be back. So it was great the first time and absolutely had just the ball. Loved it.
Thank you, and I feel the same way about you. I'm looking forward to this, and especially your new book. Last time we talked about your first book, titled Last Exit to Montauk, and it was your memories of summers on Long Island that actually ignited that story. So for those who may not have listened to that episode, just give us a brief synopsis of the story, and then they'll head over and listen to the first one again.
Absolutely. So Last Exit to Montauk, it's a coming-of-age love story set in the summertime on the North Shore of Long Island in the mid-80s. It is a love story between a Hispanic 17-year-old boy on the verge of manhood, you know, ready to conquer the world, and the beautiful, blonde, intelligent, young female protagonist who is nicknamed Bee in the novel. It really is much more than just a coming-of-age love story or romance, though. Bee really becomes part of the young protagonist's soul, and he really she becomes part of him and never forgets her. The great news is it's won many. It is an award-winning novel. It has sold extremely well, and those that have taken the time to read it have just said nothing but so many lovely things about the story and it bringing them back to their adolescence and their first love and the possibilities that happen when first love happens.
And you seem to have that ability to, your writing just seems effortless and it just takes the reader back. And so this new book, The Captain and the Queen, is kind of a continuation of that coming of age romance theme, but with different characters.
Right. Similar to Last Exit to Montauk, The Captain and the Queen is a coming of age love story. You know, it is set on Long Island in the mid 80s, although it doesn't stay on Long Island. It also goes into New York City. And really the story follows what I like to call the improbable romance that springs up between a middle-class Hispanic high school senior, you know, and his worldly yet sheltered classmate, Callista or Callie, who are friends, who happens to be the daughter of a Greek tycoon. And throughout the novel, their passions are tested as they transition from friends to really something more. And it, you know, begs the question, you know, how long could it possibly last? The fun part about writing The Captain and the Queen is that it is set in the same universe as my previous novel, you know, as Last Exit. It is set on, you know, it's set in the mid-80s. It's set on Stony Brook, out on Long Island in New York. But as you mentioned, Pat, it is based on different characters. The great news is you don't need to have read my previous novel to enjoy this one. Not that I'm asking you not to read it, of course. I would love you to read both. But if you hadn't, you will still enjoy The Captain and the Queen. If you have read Last Exit to Montauk, you will most definitely find Easter eggs in the new novel. And without revealing spoilers, that's all I'll say.
Okay. Now, your female character, Callista, you gave her the edge where he was quite shy and didn't want to make that first move. She pushed him into the relationship, which I thought was very cool of you as a male to take that viewpoint and, you know, put yourself in her shoes and turn the whole thing around. Let's talk about that.
Sure. You know, so I wanted to, you know, in the first novel, you know, there was parity between the two protagonists, right? Between B and the male protagonist in Last Exit to Montauk. In this one, I wanted to turn the narrative a little bit on its side, in that, you know, in lieu of having, you know, the male be the protagonist, you know, the hero, so to speak, you know, riding in on his, you know, white horse. No, in this case, I really want the female protagonist to be the aggressor of the two. You know, she knows what she wants and she goes after it. And you know what? That's reality. That's real life. And so I wanted to portray that in this novel. And so far the feedback that I'm receiving is that I've done a good job in portraying that. You know, there's certainly some vulnerability in both, but you know, I want to make a point of, especially in today's world, you know, especially during the Me Too movement and you know, the empowerment of women. Hey, look, women can be the part, you know, women can take the lead. Mm-hmm. And in this novel, you know, she does.
I appreciated that. I'm thinking, you go, girl. He's taking too much time. It was, you know, come on, buddy. You know, what the heck?
Exactly. You know, so you know, she took the bull by the horn, so to speak.
But as you said, you still left her with some vulnerability. It wasn't like she was so aggressive that you didn't like her.
Sure.
She was a really well-written character. So teenage love in the 80s, so much nostalgia, I'm sure, for so many of your readers. But there's also other issues. What are some of the other issues that you chose to cover?
So in this novel, you know, there are areas of, we'll call it, violence, maybe, or certainly there's a bullying and some physical abuse that occurs with some other characters. Where in today's world, you know, we're just starting to see those challenges and issues addressed in the media, and you know, in the 80s, you know, those were, I don't know if the right word is hidden, but they weren't addressed, and these are going to be things that I continue to address in my novels moving forward. You know, I plan on having strong Hispanic leads, white collar leads, because those are the role models that I grew up with, growing up in a strong white collar Hispanic household with a strong. My mother was a physician, so she was a medical doctor. And so those, you know, I will have those types of role models in all of my novels. And also strong female, lead characters as well. You know, not just Callista, or Callie, but also, I mean, B in the first novel, strong female character, as was Ma, as were other characters in this novel. Callie and some of her friends, you know, certainly have a strong presence. But there's also, protagonists in this that, you know, there's some, you know, light. I do shine a light on bullying and potential physical abuse, or mental abuse that occurs. So those are areas that I shine the light on a little bit in this novel, and I'll continue to do so because those are areas that need to be addressed. And you know, if you shine the light on it enough, I don't know that it'll ever stop, but it'll certainly. We can certainly, you know, address it, right?
Absolutely. The more conversation that we can bring up about these topics and others that are extremely important as well, yeah, the more you talk about something, the more the chances are that you can, I don't know if you could solve it, but you could at least maybe curb it, or, you know, just
right.
create some positive movement to help fix it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Especially today, right? Especially in today's world. And you know, we're starting to see things, you know, move towards a positive area, but there's still tremendous room for improvement, is what I'll say.
Well, absolutely. So I commend you for not only writing a romance, a love story, a coming of age story, but there still is a lot of meat behind all of it that your readers can grasp onto. And speaking of your readers, who would you say is your audience? This is set in the 80s, but I'm sure this is going to be a book that's attractive to all ages.
This one is really a, you know, a YA audience to, I just had feedback from a 93-year-old who just finished reading this one for the second time. So she read my first one three times. When she heard this one came out, she went, you know, she had her granddaughter buy it for her online, and she's read it twice, and she sent me a note via her granddaughter. I received a very lovely email. So the audience is, you know, YA to you know, plus. And both stories are told from a male perspective.
Right.
So it's not just written for women, but for men. And I've received a tremendous amount of feedback from male readers who, you know, traditionally don't pick up, you know, coming-of-age love stories. But in both cases, that's a little different. You know, somebody said, wow, it's, because of the way it's written, it reminded them of, my novel seemed to be a mix of, you know, the Wonder Years meets Gossip Girl meets, you know, today's world. So I thought, okay, sure.
Yeah.
You know, because it's being told from the male's perspective, right, and the male voice, even though it's a love story. So it's a broad audience. I would love everyone to read it. You know, Last Exit to Montauk, you know, is, I've received many 4- and 5-star reviews. I've won awards. But I also have some, you know, 2-star reviews and 1-star reviews. And I read them all and I'm like, okay, you know what? I take them all in. Mm-hmm. And I reflect on all of them. I go, okay, it's not for everybody. You know, not everybody loves chocolate ice cream. I don't understand it, but they don't. But that's okay. You know, having said that, you know, a good cross section of people do seem to enjoy my work.
Right.
So that's the blessing.
There you go. So as you're writing the second book, did you feel that the writing process moved more swiftly than the first?
My first novel took me, 6 weeks to write. Very briefly, you know, becoming a published author, a novelist, was never on the roadmap, as I mentioned in my previous interview, and it just occurred, you know, one rainy August afternoon after coming home from shopping with my wife. So, having said that, you know, I followed the same process, and this novel also took me 6 weeks to write, and the current, you know, and I'm currently on my next novel, my third. And it'll take me about 6 weeks from beginning to end to write. You know, as I mentioned in my previous interview, the dam has burst. I have, since our previous interview, the number of manuscripts that I have started increased from 16. I'm up to 27 now, which my publisher and editor, Janet Fix of The Word Verve, who is absolutely wonderful to work with, is very excited about. So, you know, it's sitting down, finding the time, and then just allowing the process to take over. You know, my process is I go to my home office, usually, unless I'm traveling for my day job. And then, you know, I've created a musical playlist for myself on YouTube, you know, different artists from the 80s and 70s, because that's my, you know, that's my musical preference. And I just start, you know, listening to the music puts me in a certain mode, and I just start writing, and it's great.
And as you were speaking, I was thinking about your characters from one book to the next, and now that you've got 27 different ideas in the making, It's so easy to fall in love with characters. So how do you move from one set of characters to another? Are there still little pieces of the first people in the second book? How do you keep that separate?
It's a great question. So again, while there are Easter eggs and there will continue to be Easter eggs throughout my novels, my intention is to create a universe, if you would. Some are calling this the Stony Brook Chronicles, because so far all of my novels and all of my manuscripts do take place in the same universe, but with different characters. And I look at it this way, back when, we were in high school, every student had their own journey. Some fell in love, some didn't, some had their challenges. But everybody has their own story. And so each of these novels are, different players, if you would, and their own stories. So I absolutely fell in love with all the people that I wrote about in my first novel, Last Exit to Montauk. As I wrote it, I laughed. As I wrote it, I cried. There were moments of laughter and tears, and the emotions went all over. And the same thing with my second novel. And with the second novel, it was I fell in love with these characters. And as I'm writing my third novel, I'm falling in love with those characters. So it's snippets of time that I'm thoroughly enjoying and falling in love with these characters as they come out of me. And when the when the novel's over, I'm thankful and grateful and blessed. And start working with my publisher, Janet, and then get on the next novel. It's almost like seeing all of your favorite movies. Mm-hmm. I love The Princess Bride, one of my favorite movies. But I also love Forrest Gump, one of my favorite movies. And I also love Mel Brooks movies. So different movies, different themes. Different characters, but I love them all. Just the same. Just like I love Star Wars. I love Captain Kirk as much as I love Princess Buttercup, as much as I love Luke Skywalker. Right. So it's just different characters. You fall in love with them, but you enjoy them all.
Oh my gosh! You know what? After 27 of these Stony Brook universes. You might want to have a reunion where all these characters get together, have some giant high school reunion and bring them all together.
Right. Exactly. That'd be great. Well, it's funny you say that. So interestingly enough, over the summer, and I created a contest from it, but over the summer, someone was kind enough to send me, they got a hold of me and they sent me a bunch of photos of them taking a tour of Last Exit to Montauk. So they went around to all the different locations mentioned in the book.
Oh.
Because the locations in the books are real.
Mm-hmm.
The Hercules statue that's mentioned in Last Exit to Montauk is real. I mean, it's really there in the village of Stony Brook. Stony Brook is a real location on Long Island. Port Jefferson's that's mentioned is real. So there were this person went out and she took a bunch of pictures of herself with the novel, and it was heartwarming, and it was I felt blessed, and it was just overwhelming. I was beyond words. And from that I created a contest on my website and on my Facebook page. Hey, go out and go out and take pictures of yourself with the novel, and the top three will win a prize, and for them the prize is they each receive the autographed copies of the novels that I have out, and also I will create characters with their names in my next novel. Mm. So it was fun. It was just a fun contest, but it all started with somebody going out there and just doing a pilgrimage. With Last Exit to Montauk, and I was like, wow, I'd be totally blown away.
Oh my gosh. How cool is that somebody thought to do that? I love that.
Totally blown away. I was speechless.
Oh, I would be too. I love that idea, and your contest sounds awesome as well. So it's a great way to promote. Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about your cover because it won an award. How did that come about?
So so my cover, I submitted it to a contest. I mean, you know, I worked with, so I found the cover art online, and I didn't think it was available for, you know, for resale. Long story short, you know, I submitted the artwork to my publisher, and through her, you know, through one of her folks, Angie, who's wonderful, she found out that it was available. And so we, you know, Angie did some great touch-ups and things, and it, you know, it's in a sense won awards on just the artwork, and there's just something about the photo, the picture that I just love. I love the innocence behind it, but the passion behind it as well, of a, you know, of a man and a woman just about to kiss. You have no idea, you know, his race, her race, because the color, which Angie did a great job with. But it's just something about the cover that I just fell in love with. And the same thing for my first novel as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you for sharing that. Covers are so important. Yeah, there was something captivating about it.
There's a longing to the kiss that's about to happen. Yep. That I just fell in love with.
Well, congratulations. Good job on that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And thank you, Angie Lowell, who's also wonderful and also a novelist as well. So
excellent. Now, Phil, you do a lot of speaking engagements too. I would imagine that's a great way to promote the book and get out there. Let's talk about that and share that concept of speaking and how that could helps to sell books or just brings awareness.
So, no, it does. It absolutely does. So I am available for speaking engagements. So I go and I talk about my background, my history. I share the fact that you know, being a published author and writer was not part of my plan. You know, I share that, you know, I started out as a, you know, salesperson, that I've been selling security software for, you know, over 20 years. And that being a published novelist, was a almost a lark. Having said that, it was something that, since those floodgates have turned on, it's something that I absolutely love doing, and it's become a blessing for me and my wife, because it's not just it's not just myself, it's both of us. It's even though I'm the one doing, you know, the work and the writing, you know, it's a journey for us both. Mm-hmm. I also share about my writing process. I share that, you know, even though I've won awards, and including some international awards, it hasn't been, it hasn't been without rejection. I mean, I've received rejection, goodness knows. So there have been some bumpy roads. I also share, I also read from my novels as well. And I also share my personal story, my personal faith story as well. One of the underlying themes within all of my books is that there is a bit of faith in there, is all I'll say. It's not preachy, but there's that underlying theme. So, all of my books will have strong female protagonists. They'll all have white-collar Hispanic families. I will touch on faith somewhere, somehow, just because of where all the characters seem to cross-section, which is at the high school. It is a Christian prep school, so there is some of that as well. So I share a little bit of that too, and how it influences my writing and how it's influenced my life. And then I take questions, and some of the questions that I get are just, I mean, they're wonderful. Some people have asked me, would I change anything? Would I have started doing this earlier? And, you know, the answer is I wouldn't change a thing. I think, you know, starting and finishing my first novel at the age of 49, right before I turned 50, was something that, you know, was meant to happen. And, you know, all it takes is putting your, excuse my friends, but putting your butt in the seat and just start writing. And, you know, just let the passion flow out of you and see what happens.
And I'm sure that's very inspiring to your listeners to think, wow, I've got a story inside of me. Maybe I can do this too.
I've talked to quite a few folks over the year, over the past, I mean, again, I've only been doing this really since for 2 years now, you know, part-time professionally. And so I can't tell you how many people I've told, look, everybody has a story to tell. You know, all you got to do is just sit down and write it. And I've received, I've referred two brand new authors to my publisher over in the past year and a half.
Wow.
And it's been just, you know, that's the blessing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, so not only are your books a gift to people, but if they are lucky to hear you speak, that's a gift as well. So that information, all of that information is at your website, which I want to grab. Before we do that, is there anything else that we've missed that you wanted to bring up?
I would love to see these stories help change some narratives in our country. I think that you know, we're starting to see certain things, especially as it relates to you know, Hispanics, as it relates to women, as it relates to various communities. You know, my next novel will include LGBTQ characters as well. And, you know, I am concerned for minorities, regardless of gender or race, you know, what we're seeing in the media. Mm-hmm. So I would love my novels to have a voice or an influence in the positive, because it's to create a recipe called the United States, it isn't just, you know, eggs and milk. You also have to, you know, there's salt and pepper, and, you know, there's a variety of spices in order to make this wonderful cake or pizza called you know, United States of America. Mm-hmm. For me, it's always pizza because, you know, being from New York, you know, you not only have to enjoy pizza, you have to love Billy Joel, you have to say hit him with the hein, Baba Booey, and love bagels. But so I will always go back to my analogies will typically, you know, include food of some manner. But getting back to your question, Pat, you know, I would love to see my work help influence in the positive. You know, create a change, or at least, you know, turn the dialogue on its side, because not every Hispanic in our country is, you know, they're not migrant workers, they're not coming over, you know, illegally. Yeah, you know, my mother certainly didn't. You know, she was a valedictorian of her medical program at Columbia. She was a doctor. She was a professional. My father the same. So, you know, those are the reference points for me. Those are the reference points that I'll be sharing with my audience, and you know, hopefully inspire them to pursue those as well.
You were right. We are living in some very precarious times where we really need to pay attention in every little small way if we could all make a difference. And as you say, your books are doing that, and your third book coming out. Is there a title for that we can anticipate?
It's tentatively titled "Searching for Sarah."
Okay.
That's the tentative title.
Okay.
And unlike the first two, where they were coming of age love stories, this one is more of a family or familial story, discovery piece between siblings.
Okay.
So it's a love story between siblings, in that you know, the brother discovers things about his sister after she passes away, and it's a journey and a discovery piece with familial love, you know, family love mixed in, as well as a love story between, you know, his sister and the people that she falls in love with. And so the brother gets to see it from, you know, through her journals and through her diary, and also via flashback. So
that sounds fascinating. So much in your brain, Phil.
Oh, sister, you have no idea. I tell you, I was driving home the other day from an event in Miami with my wife, and you know, I was just sitting there, you know, driving up I-75, and all of a sudden, you know, the process kicked off. I don't know if it was because I was listening to the radio or if it was just, you know, just the drive, but all of a sudden, you know, the vision of a new story or novel started playing out in my mind's eye, which is what happened for me. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm thinking to myself, here we go again. So, you know, we got home, you know, 2.5 hours later, and I told my wife, you know, after unpacking the car and stuff, I said, well, I've got to go. I'll pop right back. Yeah, I've got to go write something down. She goes, another vision or another story. I'm like, I just kind of rubbed my eyes and was like, yeah. She's like, okay, you know, my wife, Jeanette, is just, I mean, she is my rock, and she is just the best. We've been together for 27 years, married for 25, and she is my, you know, she is my stake in the ground, and she's just my world.
Aww.
And so she, you know, so she just smiled at me and just shook her head. She's like, yeah, go ahead. She's like, I'll see you in a few minutes. I'm like, okay, you know, gave her a kiss, and yeah, went to the office and started typing away. So that's the fun process. The great news is I got to tell you, Pat, I'm surrounded by people that have been absolute blessings, and some who I've never, you know, some who I've never met in person, and some who have just entered my life just as recent as the past year and a half, like Janet Fix, my publisher and editor with The Word Verve, people that work with her like Angie Galleon, who's just a wonderful asset to Angie, but also an extremely talented author and herself, and also Sharon Bradford Lund, who is on her marketing team also. All three are just, I mean, just a blessing. Mm-hmm. So, and these are people that I didn't know, you know, 3 years ago.
Yep.
who just become a, you know, so close and so important.
Well, you're obviously where you are supposed to be.
Indeed.
Yep.
Indeed. And I got to tell you, I'm so looking forward to, you know, where the road's taking me. It's wide open, you know, and it's very bright, and you know, I've got my prescription sunglasses on, and I, you know, looking forward to the journey, because it's continuing. It's just starting, even though I'm working on my third novel.
Yep. Well, you are an inspiration, and I want folks to find out more about you and find out where they can get a hold of your book. So send us to your website, or wherever else would be a good place to find more about Philip Vega.
Absolutely. So if they want to learn more about me, they can go to philipvega.com. That's Philip with two L's, and then V-E-G-A, like the place without that expensive S on the end. So philipvega.com. They can also reach out to me via my publisher, thewordverve.com. That's thewordverve, V-E-R-V-E.com. Or any online retailer, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, Walmart, they all have copies of my novels, and they're available in both paperback as well as, you know, every digital format you can think of.
Right.
So that's, and hopefully in the future, maybe you'll even see them, you know, on Netflix or in the movie theater, because I'd love to see them translated to those kinds of media platforms as well.
Well, it seems like you're on that trajectory, so I think we could be looking forward to that at some point in time. You have to keep us posted on that, right?
Absolutely. You know, I look at folks like Nicholas Sparks, Stephen King, you know, J.K. Rowling. I certainly don't say that I'm anywhere, you know, look, I'm not as talented as those are talented individuals, but I'm just looking at, you know, what they did, and that, you know, I would love to mirror their success is all I'll say.
Well, if you can see it and believe it, then it can happen. That's my philosophy.
Amen, Pat. Amen.
Got it. Well, my friend, this has been, well, you never disappoint. Just so much good information, good conversation, and very inspiring. And so I want to thank you again for reaching out to me to share your newest book, The Captain and the Queen, philipvega.com. And dare I say, Baba Booey before we say goodbye.
Absolutely. Hit him with the hind, Pat. Hit him with the hind. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.